This is Jordan Seculo. Today on J Seculo Live, the war over DACA begins.
Live from Washington, D.C., J Seculo Live.
DACA was executive order. Legal is the law of passage of something. There are 10 attorneys general that are prepared to sue. I don't want to get into that. The point is DACA is here, and we've got 800,000 young people.
Well, your answer indicates, though, that it's on shaky legal ground.
It is. That's why we need to pass a law, and we should do it.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
I look at Democrats. They controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House in 2009 and 2010. They didn't deal with the Dreamers. They didn't take up this cause and help these kids. It was actually Marco Rubio in 2011 who had a bill to deal with the Dreamers that President Obama jumped in ahead of him and did this executive action, which totally tanked the actual fix to this law.
And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hello and welcome to J Seculo Live. This is Jordan Seculo. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We heard, the outrage from the left. We've seen the protest. I think they're entirely misplaced, at least the protests we've seen on television, which have been focused at Trump Tower in New York off Fifth Avenue and the White House, the president's residence, but not, at least not in that the focus has not been on the U.S. Capitol. Because it is Congress who will ultimately decide the fate of these individuals. And Logan, the president, I think just to make it even that much clearer, said that if this six-month time period passed, he's not looking to be heartless or cruel. He will again review this specific issue of Dreamers and if he needs to act because Congress has again failed. So I want you to understand here, the pressure is not on the president. He's given himself two options here. One is the long-term solution to this problem, which is Congress acting for this narrow category of individuals. We are not talking about legalizing 12 million people when we talk about DACA. We're talking about legalizing if new people register at this six-month time period, but somewhere under a million people. Okay, that does not have a big impact on our immigration, on those who are in line. These folks were already there. I get that some of their problems, listen, I'm compassionate when it comes to the fact that they may not even speak a language of the country they would be deported to. They had never even been to that country. Most are in their 20s. So I get it can be a scary situation for people. And President Obama was the person who walked them right into that. It was not President Trump. It was a president who first admitted he was not a king, didn't have the power, said this was going to be temporary, and then for his final term in office, did nothing for these Dreamers. He was not able to work with Congress to do anything. You know why? Wouldn't tie anything to actual border security, real border security. So he failed the Dreamers. President Obama is the person who walked and these Dreamers right into the situation they are in now. And so President Trump has done two things. One, he's told Congress, get to work. Get this on my desk. I've heard a lot of people today say, Logan, we don't know what the president will sign. Well, one, I mean, he could be real specific, but let's be honest with this Congress. I think it's easier just to say, what could you actually get out of Congress? Because you haven't been very good at it, Republicans. I mean, it specifically is Republicans, who are causing the issues here. So I want to take your phone calls about it. 1-800-684-3110. The legal challenges are also coming as well. When we come back from the break, I'm going to get a live report from our Director of Government Affairs, Stan Bennett, in Washington, D.C., because we really need to understand, I think all of us do, the makeup of the different coalitions on Capitol Hill amongst members of the House, members of the Senate. I think this is one that if it gets through the House, it's very easy in the Senate. If you do it as a standalone kind of issue, I mean, it may have border security as part of it, but, not attach it to three other things that are unrelated. It's really, this battle is really, I think, tougher in the House than it is the U.S. Senate. I think you'd have a lot more bipartisan support there, but you never know. You're dealing with Congress, and they have been failing us over and over again. Not individual members, but collectively has been a big failure for all of the American people. But Logan, tell people they can give us a call. Comment on Facebook and Periscope. We are here. We've got Than in Washington. We're going to bring him some more guests as well.
That's right. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. A couple lines are still open, 1-800-684-3110. You can also get your comments in as we broadcast live video and audio on Facebook, on Periscope, and on Twitter at JSeculo, or go to the JSeculo page on Facebook. We'll be right back.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. And here is the big question for everyone: is it time to move on now and get this done legislatively? You know, the president, I think, has been very clear. He says it's time for Congress to get to work. Of course, he would like comprehensive immigration reform. And many presidents between Reagan and now have tried that and have gotten nowhere. Including President Obama, President Bush, President Clinton, and then the President Bush that preceded him. So you've got, again, four presidents, two of which had two terms, and then one with one term, who could not do anything since Reagan, who was a two-term president, way back in 1986 was the last time any of this has been done by Congress and not through these funky executive actions. And by the way, let me explain to you that most executive actions, memorandums that you hear, these words you hear, executive orders even, are to help implement laws. Okay, so if you get a law passed by Congress, it doesn't cover every issue that may arise. So you have to prioritize. That is what deferred action really is about: prioritizing law enforcement resources, deciding, you know, what area needs to be focused on most aggressively from the federal level. And you can also then look at that and say, the reason why the president has that power, and it's an important power, is so that you can see to it that the laws are faithfully executed. So you issue executive orders and memos to help execute the laws that Congress has passed and the president has signed. In this case, it was only the president who signed anything. There was no congressional action. And so, again, I think the legal battles, they will find liberal judges over these next 6 months, I guarantee it, who will side with them. They'll find some legal argument, there's because it's federal law, that this act wasn't done appropriately or wasn't done right. Understand this: the president is undoing an unconstitutional action. There's nothing more serious than that when it comes to the powers of the president. When the president doesn't have a power to do something, you undo that, and you don't continue on violating the Constitution of the United States. So I want you to understand, President Trump's move shows a great respect for our constitutional separation of powers. I know so many of you were concerned about this under the Obama administration. He was a unilateral kind of president in the sense that, I've got a pen, I've got a phone, that kind of thing. That's wonderful and great if you're ready to help pass legislation and sign that into law. But when you admit you're not a king, when you admit you don't have the power to do this, and then, as President Obama did, and then you do it, well, it may last for your administration. It may have lasted if someone else had won the presidency. But the candidate who won is a candidate who said, we're getting rid of this program. He has never said that he would not sign the similar language into actual law as it affects these 800 or so odd people specifically. And even go further with bigger immigration reform. But even just the group we're talking about here with DACA, the president has been very clear, Logan, get it to my desk. I keep hearing people say right. He's not been clear. When you take a move like this, he didn't say, and don't bother send me anything because I'm not signing this. I'm never going to put this into law. He didn't say that. He said, go to work, get something on my desk. And now he's gone one step further, Logan, in his tweets.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. You see in the tweets specifically saying, all right, it's your turn. If you don't get it done, guess what? It says, yeah, here it is. It says, if you're watching on Facebook, you can see it. Congress now 6 months to legalize DACA, something the Obama administration was unable to do. If they can't, I'll revisit the issue. So let's actually go quickly to line one. Robert in Maryland, who probably has that question that a lot of people have that's a bit it's a bit hard to get from the mainstream media. But Robert, you're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Logan. Hi, Jordan. I wanted to ask the both of you the question, where does President Trump stand on the issue of DACA, the deferred action for childhood arrivals? And I think that means children who came to this country from parents who came over to this country illegally, and those kids were born in the United States. I think it's what it's referring to, that category of immigrants.
No, if they were born in the United States, they were U.S. citizens. They would already be citizens. That's what DACA was about.
This is almost kids who had their choice.
You were like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I mean, I think it counts all the way up to 18 technically. Right. But they may have some numbers on it. I can't recall if it was 16 or 18. It was something like that. So you were born. And of course the older you get, the more you realize what you're doing, but still you're treated as someone, not an adult, who was born in your country of your parents' home. So whether that's Mexico or somewhere else in South America or anywhere else in the world, in Central America, South America, it could be Africa. I mean, it does not matter. You were born there. You were brought over to the United States illegally. And I have a lot of compassion, but I want to make sure that point is clear. These were not people born in the United States, because, Robert, those people under our existing interpretation of the Constitution are U.S. citizens.
That's right. In the chat, our producer just put it, says, here's sort of the language for it. It says, DACA provided certain illegal aliens who entered the United States before the age of 16 a period of deferred action. So it's 16 and eligibility to request employment authorization.
Yep.
But again, like you said, the president's not necessarily saying that that's anything wrong with that. He just didn't like the way it was put in place.
Didn't like how it was put in place, which is by the executive action rather than the legislative process and then signed into law by the president. And by the way, if it was signed into the law by the president, it wouldn't be so unclear. Like, I read that and it's very unclear because, yeah, you can, if you entered before the age of 16, you get a period of deferred action. That means you won't be deported. And then you're eligible. Understand there, it does not mean you are given, but you'd be eligible to request an employment authorization. So you're only eligible to request that authorization. I just want to be clear there. This is President Obama who caused the problem for all these folks, okay? And he didn't even give them that much. He gave them a deferred action, but he kept re-upping it and re-upping it and re-upping it. He didn't say, if Congress doesn't act after this time, there's nothing I can do. This is as extreme as I can. Instead, He gave people something that was no good for them. Let's go to the phones.
All right, let's continue on. Let's go to Jennifer, who's calling from Los Angeles, California, online too.
Hi, I wanted to comment. Thank you for what you're doing. I thought that Sessions was excellent when he described the legality and that the process by which this was deterred did not indicate that those who are legally looking for amnesty by which they can become legal citizens through a process by which they gain citizenry. I thought he was excellent. My concern is that it's become such a hotbed in Los Angeles that protests, it's become like a lockdown bipartisan issue where no work can even, because it would be wonderful if the president could explain the process by which those who are here gain amnesty so they don't panic and feel like they're going to automatically be deported, because I'm so for his programs, but because of the bipartisanship in our nation, it gets locked down.
Well, listen, what you saw is that The media is going to act as if, and this is why. They're assuming, as you said, Jennifer, that Congress has this total inability to act. And so because of that, by President Trump's move, all these people are going to end up one day having to be deported. Now, he's done – there's two important parts here. One, Congress has had an inability to act on things like comprehensive health care reform. This is not comprehensive immigration reform. This is not that either. This is a very, very narrow category of people where I think there's actually – I mean, I'll tell you, I'm one of them. There's a lot of bipartisan support to put them on a path, not because they – as minors did not commit a crime. You could deport them because under our immigration law, you absolutely can right now. That's legal. I don't know that that's what anybody wants to see happen. But I think they could actually put on a real, either get lawful permanent residence or with the option, if they like, of going down the citizenship route, which would take time, but they would not have to leave the U.S. They could continue working. They'd be secure. That's a legislative fix which could happen on its own for this narrow category of people. It's not going to affect everybody who's here illegally. It is not this blanket kind of decision. I would hope, and I'll go to Than Bennett here. Than, I would hope this is where Congress still has the ability to act, is when you're talking about such a narrow category group of people.
Well, I understand why people like Jennifer might be losing confidence in Congress's ability to do anything at all because they've failed time and time again. But look, Jordan, be that as it may, it doesn't give the president authority to act. And it is so nice to have a president that recognizes that. When President Obama ran into this, he just acted on his own and usurped that Article I power that belongs to Congress. But on this issue, Jordan, and I know the president through Sarah Huckabee Sanders asked for comprehensive immigration reform yesterday, but I think you said it right. I actually think he's taking a negotiating posture there, because I think if that is the position that he stakes out and Congress comes to the table with Republicans and Democrats and provides a solution to these 800,000 people that are DACA participants, I think there's a lot of room in there for whatever that may look like, and I think he would sign it. I think that's what he's looking for from them.
All right, folks, we come back. We're going to take more of your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We've got a new petition we've launched at aclj.org to call for a complete investigation of Jim Comey, and especially how he handled the Clinton investigation, as we brought to light the fact that he had already begun drafting the exoneration of Hillary Clinton before he had interviewed any of the key witnesses. Any. None of them had yet been interviewed by the FBI. A new petition there at aclj.org. Go online and sign that petition at aclj.org. We'll talk about Hurricane Irma in a minute as well. Continue prayers for Houston. We'll be right back.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
Listen, we have listeners all over the country, and there's a state in our country, one of the handful, there's like a handful of states like this, Florida being one of them, where so many people have family, whether it's parents or grandparents or just loved ones, but family members, and certainly good friends, who live in the state. It's a large state, population-wise, also by the size of the state and the way it's, again, a lot of people from all over the country who call it home now. And we have Hurricane Irma, which is at a Category 5 level, but probably would be at a 4 by the time it reaches the United States mainland. Now, it's already Puerto Rico, which is part of the United States, is getting hit. All the islands that you know about, the Bahamas and throughout, are being hit. I think Dominican, Haiti, you know, all that area, Cuba could possibly. And because of that's going on right now, we don't exactly know, if this hurricane goes a little more west, straight up, which would be like a direct hit up almost on Miami. It's got the Florida Keys impact. There's a mandatory evacuation of the Keys. Of course, it could go up east as well. But if you're in Florida specifically, and we got radio stations, I mean, I could be talking to you. Maybe you right now may be in the Panhandle, and so you're not feeling quite the pressure yet. But you also may be in the Miami area, and I just moved up from that area about a year or so ago. And I will tell you, people there are pretty smart about it, but this is much bigger. People used to talk about, it's been 20 years since Hurricane Andrew. Yeah. It doesn't happen that often. And that's true. Thank goodness. It doesn't happen that often. But when it does, they are usually very, if there's a direct hit, you're talking about, again, a just as large almost area as Houston. Not the same kind of flooding concerns, but when you got 170 mile per hour winds, that does not necessarily matter as much. So, let me just say to our Florida audience, follow the instructions of your government. If there is a mandatory evacuation of your area, if you're in the Keys, get out. That's the only place I think under mandatory evacuation in Florida yet. But there will be very regionalized, you know, we're speaking to the whole state here,
right,
and the whole country. But if you're listening, you got family in Florida, that's why I wanted to say this right now. Unlike just covering whatever that happens here, and hopefully it spins out into the middle of the ocean and we don't have to be talking about this again.
That's what we hope.
But we got, I guarantee you how many people that are listening to this broadcast, I bet everybody almost has got somebody in Florida.
Yeah.
Or they have a trip coming up to Florida. It's just that kind of state with the entertainment, with the retirement community, and the beaches. Again, it is hurricane season, so this is part of it. But I just encourage you all, take the advice. You may be in an area that never gets tasked to evacuate, but at least have water. You know, what could you do without power? Because you may not be under the worst, but your power still could go out. And then for those of you, if you've got young kids or anything, just listen to the government. I know it's not easy all the time to pack up everything and go. The older you are, if you've got a lot of children, animals, but just take them all with you. Throw them all in the car. Get as far away from this as you can. Contact loved ones. Contact people you know. Right now, you have time to do that. You have time to throw your things in the car.
Absolutely.
In a day or two, you may not be. You may be just jumping into the car.
Well, the problem is gas.
Yeah.
People are afraid of food and gas shortage. I mean, I have a ton of friends in Florida. I lived there for many years, and a lot of them are sticking around and, you know, risking it. Now, a lot of them are more inland or in central Florida, so they've been through this before. It's usually not as bad, but right now it's looking rough, and you know, obviously everyone needs to play this safe. Because a lot of people maybe didn't go through this or went through this at a much younger age. Don't really know what this is about.
20 plus years since Hurricane Andrew. I was living in Miami for about a year and a half. Some of you who listen, long-term listeners may remember that when I was not on camera. It was still my picture. Yes, Floridians do watch carefully. If this was a Category 2, most people there would not be leaving. But this is not. Okay, guys, I mean, just take it seriously. Look at the pictures online. Look at the size difference between this and what Harvey was, and realize just act as if it's the worst case scenario and listen to your government officials who I see are doing briefings throughout the day, and they're doing it for all of you. The same reason why I'm saying this on our broadcast, just heed those warnings because, I mean, we will if we have to, but we don't want to be in the situation next week on this broadcast, coming back on a Monday, where it's also another major U.S. city or cities underwater or totally destroyed. I remember areas looking between Miami and the beginning of the Keys, Homestead, got totally wiped out by Andrew. It's just been rebuilt, just started to be rebuilt in the last 5-10 years.
Yeah, I have friends, parents who sadly died in it.
These are real storms when they hit. I know it's not often, and that's a good thing,
But take it seriously.
But they do hit. I mean, it's not like there's no history for something like this. So, again, we'll get into it more if we have to. I think the later it gets in the week, we'll know more and more. But I did want to just tell people, follow the instructions of your government.
All right. Let's get back to phone calls as we take on this subject on DACA. Let's go to Melody, who is calling in Kentucky with a question about the situation.
Hi. I was just wondering about the Dreamers. I understand that they came here when they were little, but what about the parents that are here illegal still?
Well, the parents were supposed to be covered under another executive action. It was called DAPA. You may remember it, Deferred Action for the Parents of Americans. So that was going to cover parents possibly, because they may have had some that were in this situation who were brought here and they got in the DACA situation. They may have had another kid who then is American. So if you're an American, then your parent could stay. But that was held to be unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court, upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court, upholding a Fifth Circuit decision. So the parents are not covered under any of this. Now, that does not mean that we have to take exactly what President Obama did, and that's what should be passed by Congress. They could literally take this and do that, and that would probably be maybe the easiest route, because you're only talking about the children. Parents, again, who have been here illegally for that kind of period of time, they didn't register, thank goodness. They didn't have, as I said on Fox Business, you had to have a horrible, horrible immigration attorney who told you to go and register to the federal government that you're here illegally, okay? Because they might give you a work permit for 2 years. You ask that attorney, so I'm good then? Yeah, you're good for 2 years. And maybe depending on the political wind of any president, you might not be. So that's bad lawyering, as we like to call it. And yet these people relied on President Obama. Never rely on just words. That's basically all executive orders are. Right. They are temporary. They are temporary. They do not last like laws do. And so because of that, there are a lot of people. I have compassion for them. I get their situation. I want Congress to do this. I want Congress to issue the fix so that these 800,000 become either legal permanent residents with an option to become citizens later on. I think that's probably the best way to go. You're not forcing people into citizenship, but you're not going to have that fear of deportation. And then you can move on to the bigger, real immigration battle, which is much tougher on Capitol Hill than something like this should be. But again, we'll talk about that more. We got Dan Bennett, our Director of Government Affairs, with us. We've got the Florida warning out. Just follow the orders.
Governor Scott is talking right now.
Yeah, actually. I mean, so follow the orders, and he's near Miami. So, I mean, you know, follow the instructions of your government officials. They are on TV all day. They are starting to evacuate areas in Florida. Most of that is the Keys, but that's just going to keep moving on up the coast. And as they watch this storm, which is supposed to make impact in the United States mainland at the end of the week.
Is it early next week? This week, Friday? Friday's when it's supposed to start. And then I think run through at least Monday.
Yeah. So again, we're going to keep taking your phone calls. Logan, we got a second half hour coming up. Tell people how they can get involved.
If you don't get the second hour, half hour of Jay Sekulow Live, or you have something else you'd like to experience the show in a different way, you can watch us and talk to us. Find us on social media. We're broadcasting right now. Facebook.com/JaySekulow. Twitter @JaySekulow. @JordanSekulow. Where you can watch it live. ACLJ.org. You can find us broadcasting all those sources. Or you can find everything you need at ACLJ.org, including the ACLJ app, which is available in the App Store for iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, and also in the Channel Store, Channel Marketplace on Roku. If you have a Roku device, search for ACLJ. You subscribe to the Jay Sekulow Live podcast. Right back, second half hour, Jay Sekulow Live.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
All right, so the lawsuits are being filed. The case will be moving forward. Of course, there are many on the left who just find this appalling. Whoa, even though President Obama, and you'll see it. Do we have that bite from Feinstein where she says, Senator Dianne Feinstein, ranking member, Judiciary Committee. She is a liberal, but they don't want to talk about the legal aspect of what this executive action did by President Obama. Take a listen.
DACA was executive order. Legal is the law of passage of something. There are 10 attorneys general that are prepared to sue. I don't want to get into that. The point is DACA is here, and we've got 800,000 young people.
Well, your answer indicates, though, that it's on shaky legal ground.
It is. That's why we need to pass a law, mm-hmm. and now, we should do it.
Here, let me just say, I agree that we should pass a law if you want to keep this. So that's right, Dianne Feinstein. And that's as far as she's going to go, of course, with saying, she's not going to say unconstitutional, but shaky legal ground. Now, if one of the most liberal members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, who totally loves this DACA program, will admit on television live that this is on shaky legal ground, do you know what that tells me? It's not shaky legal ground. The ground crumbled. Okay, because that's the most liberals talking politically. Let me go to Than Bennett. Than, if Dianne Feinstein says that, hey, she's echoing what President Obama had already said when he was president, which is, I'm not a king. I don't have the power to do this. I am not a unilateral actor. Congress has laws. And then even when he did do it, he said it was only temporary. Well, temporary, again, you can make up all different kinds of what temporary means, but this would be, I think, the fourth authorization of DACA. So 8 years is not temporary.
Jay, everyone from Dianne Feinstein to Jay Sekulow to President Obama to President Trump knows that the action that was taken by President Obama was unconstitutional. They all know it, but yet some of them are so in love with the policy that they're willing to go along with. I think it's particularly rich, Jordan, that the same people that defended President Obama's authority to enact this are now knocking and threatening to sue President Trump's decision to undo it. So if there's the authority to establish the program in the first place through executive action, well, then, of course, President Trump has the ability to unwind it. And I would just say this to Senator Feinstein. If she thinks that there needs to be a law passed, what she needs to do is reach across the aisle to the Republican majorities in her chamber and the chamber in the House and work out a compromise that involves border security as well. Because, Jordan, I'm here to tell you, if there was something that involved a little bit of border security and a legalization that allows these families to stay united, I think that would pass with 75% majorities in both chambers of the Congress.
All right, Logan, do we have time for a call? Can we grab one call before this break?
Yeah, let's take one quick call. Let's go to Jerry in Rhode Island on line one.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Jordan, what is the nature of these 10 lawsuits, and were they already in play before the announcement the other day?
So I don't think they've been filed yet. So these 10 states have been coming together because you always look for, okay, especially if you're going to file right at the beginning of a new presidency, and though I know it feels like it's been a longer time than that, but this is still the beginning, and that's because court cases take a long time. You heard Attorney General Sessions say, and President Trump say, this is coming to court. So we were going to have to make up our mind as Department of Justice, not just whether to allow this for another 2 years, but to defend what President Obama did in court as constitutional, or we're going to have to announce that we believe it's not. So those cases will likely not move forward right now because DACA has been rescinded. The only change would be is if somehow they were forced to put DACA back up by the United States Supreme Court. And then maybe you see those lawsuits once again. I doubt, by the way, that we're going to get that far. This is easier in the executive order cases on like the travel ban and things like that. But that is what we're talking about. We are talking about states that were getting ready to challenge. That means, correctly, the Department of Justice was preparing for that challenge and in preparation has to decide. First question asked. Is what we're defending constitutional part of the constitutional powers of the President of the United States? If the answer is no, as it is here, you don't have to continue on with your analysis. So those cases are probably moot as of this moment because the DACA has been rescinded.
All right, we'll be back in 10 seconds. If you're watching online, we're not going to be back in 10 seconds. We're going to break in 10 seconds. But if you're watching online, you get an exclusive video. Stay tuned.
This is a critical time for our nation. and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation, the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Than Bennett joining us in our government affairs office. He's our director there, and he's in Washington, D.C. We're taking phone calls, but I want to go first to Than on the issue of Congress here. Than, likelihood, I want to lay it out for you. We're talking DACA. We have launched a new petition online at aclj.org to begin, we're asking the government to begin a new investigation of Jim Comey's actions in light of the news that was uncovered by Senator Grassley and the two chairs of the Senate Judiciary Committee that Jim Comey was already writing his remarks about ending the investigation of Hillary Clinton without bringing any charges. Oh, the 4 months before he did so, he was already writing that. So he'd come to the conclusion. And before he interviewed any of the 16 key witnesses, he or the FBI agents in charge of the case. Pretty much a miscarriage of justice, if you ask me. So we believe there should be an investigation there. But Than, back to DACA. Everybody's talking about this right now. It'd be tough to ask for anybody to answer this, but I will ask you, Than. Any confidence that Congress could actually get this one done?
Well, I think part of the reason there's skepticism, Jordan, is because they have been proven incapable of governing by anything but deadline. I mean, just look at this week. They're facing deadlines on the Harvey aid. They're also facing the likelihood of needing aid for Irma. They've got the debt ceiling increase, and they've got to keep the government funded. And, Jordan, they've had the entire year to work on all of those issues except for the Harvey aid, and yet here we are up against the deadline, and they're just now taking it on. So now, when the president has done the exact right thing and said this is an Article 1 issue, this DACA legislating, trying to figure out what to do with the 800,000 who came as a participant, you have 6 months to figure it out. You would think, Jordan, that in a situation like that, that 6 months would be more than enough to do it, especially since, as I said in a previous segment, I think there are overwhelming majorities in both chambers that agree on this. Here is my prediction, though. I think we will be pushing the end of that deadline, the end of that six-month period, and they still will not have a deal because track record has shown us that this Congress is currently incapable of legislating unless they're up against a deadline. Now, I will say this. I think they can do it. I just want to warn people that I think it's going to take some time, and I think you're going to see a lot of posturing on both sides of the aisle to get a little bit more what they want. Hopefully, by the end of this six-month period, they'll have a consensus.
All right, let's go to the phones. 1-800-684-3110 if you want to talk to us on air. Let me be clear, too, that these people have not lost everything today. They have 6 months to sign up for two years. Okay, so it's not like President Trump is kicking these people out of the country today, or tomorrow, or even next year. 2 years plus 6 months. That's 2.5 years. So a lot of time for this to be rectified in the legal way, which is through legislation. And there has been no indication whatsoever that the President of the United States would not sign the similar language into law. Law. Not executive order, but law. Something that these individuals then would be able to rely on. They would safely be here in the United States of America, likely with the option of becoming U.S. citizens. But even if not, lawful permanent residency, I think they'd all be okay with that, too. Logan, back to the phones we go.
All right, let's go to Raj, who's calling on line 3 in Vienna, Virginia. You're on the air.
Thank you for bringing the most important issue of the day before the people. You've provided one set of the background and the narratives, but in this, I'd like to just draw attention to 2-3 things. 3 presidential candidates in years gone by have talked about self-reporting and self-deporting.
Yeah.
And then it was lost in the conversations.
However, well, none of those candidates won. I mean, I think that's the issue, Raj, is that like their policies, not like their policies, think their policies may be okay, but sounded kind of like who's doing that. And I actually understand the underlying. I think the terminology that was used was probably the worst part. It's that if you disincentivize being here, so that it's not, you're not like making more money. It's not a good thing to be here illegally. And it's actually going to be harder to live that way. Then people may leave on their own. And we see good proof of that, good evidence of that is that illegal immigration oftentimes goes down even before we now have more increased border security. So we're starting to see these kind of level off because the president's used more resources to secure our southern border, people, equipment, technology. And that's a good thing. But let me tell you that if the economy really takes a tumble in the United States, suddenly not as many people are coming here. So I think that you have to have the right elements all together. We're probably not economically in the time period right now where people don't want to be here. This is a time period where they do. I understand that. But that's the lowest priority immigrant to the United States is economic. If you are just purely coming because you have a tough life where you are, and certainly as Christians we care about that, but we also care about why those countries are facing those issues. Oftentimes we provide lots of billions of dollars of our taxpayer dollars in aid to those countries. So maybe it's being misused. But let me just say, the way our immigration is set up is if you don't speak the language and you don't have the skills that we're looking for a specific job, usually it either takes a very long time. It doesn't mean never. It just means a long time. We kind of welcome all.
Right.
There is a backlog, though. I mean, there's a lot of people waiting in line to become U.S. citizens.
Let's take some calls. Some people to hold for a long time. Marty in Seattle, Washington. Thanks for holding. You're on the air. Line 4.
Thanks. Hi, gentlemen. I'm curious if our legislature ratifies DACA, which is, we're talking 800,000 children, what are the implications for any future immigration reform? Would this set some kind of a precedent that could be more broadly interpreted or applied?
No. I mean, all that needs to be done here, I think it needs to be made clear, is that a law is a law. It doesn't set up any kind of precedent. I think what you're worried about is, does it set up a precedent for a president to act unconstitutionally and do something they like and that, hey, the majority of people may like? I think the DACA polls very highly. I get why President Obama did it. It was a political win, but he put these people in this horrible situation. Where he gave the U.S. government all of their information. And then he is not God, so he does not predict. He already admitted he's not king, but he's not God either. So he can't predict who's going to be president of the United States. He had no idea. He may have hoped it'd be Hillary Clinton so that this would not be an issue. She was not going to change it, but the courts were going to end up ultimately deciding, and they have not been good to President Obama on many of his executive actions. So no, an executive action that's bad 10 years ago is still bad today, and it has nothing to do with the legislative process. This is what when we talk about executive actions, we're talking about what can the president do on his own without Congress and just instruction by the president. It's basically the limited ability for a president to act more like a king And it's but where we allow that is really only into implementing laws passed by Congress, implementing them, like faithfully execute the laws. That's the president's job, you know. So that part, we use let him use executive order to do that. And then two, executive orders when it comes to an entirely gray area that has arisen. If it is arisen, they will sometimes issue executive orders to try and help as a stopgap measure the confusion. That's about it. And if you look at all the executive orders, it's not about the number of executive orders anybody signed. It's about, and in the foreign policy world, they have almost unlimited. Okay, so you can get to that one too. It's not about the numbers of executive orders. Some presidents need to sign more. Some don't have to sign as many. It's about what are you signing. And when it came to President Obama, it was substantive change in the law. You can't do that by executive order. Yeah, we don't want a president who can do that.
A new holiday.
It's an executive order issuing a national day of prayer, as President Trump did, which I agreed with, for Harvey, which was this past Sunday. I mean, that's an executive order. But remember,
anyone, really.
Let's go on 3 years from now, and they say how many executive orders he did. That will count in that number. So that those kind of things count. And honestly, the way President Obama did this one, it doesn't actually count as an executive order. It was done through memorandum from the Department of Homeland Security.
All right, let's take one call as we head into the break. Let's go to Mike in California online, too. Mike, you're on the air, and give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen. I support your show. You guys do a great job. It is obvious that the left continues to feed on the ignorance of so many in this country. And now with this latest ploy that they're going to sue the presidency, my question is this. Is it possible for us, the majority, to turn around and begin to sue the sanctuary cities, begin to sue the state of New York?
Well, listen, you could. Is this setting up that battle? Yes. The federal government could certainly begin to assert its rights, not to force necessarily local law enforcement officials to become immigration agents. There's issues there. And it's not so much that I think if they want to become that and they work with the federal government, that's great. But, you know, if you're an overwhelmed police force, you probably need more agents there. And that's been the issue. These cities trying to undermine the agents who work for the federal government, whose job is immigration reform. Are those lawsuits there? Yeah. I mean, the U.S. government can file lawsuits against the state, go right to the Supreme Court. So this is why it's important for everybody. And now if it's a municipality, that may be a different issue. But yes, at the same time, let me be clear. The federal government's trying to handle this, the Trump administration, without having to take all these cities to court. But they're doing it by legislative action and funding mechanisms. That is what is important, I think, that everyone must understand. We come back. More of your phone calls. Logan, tell people how to call.
1-800-684-3110. Phone lines are jammed, but we'll get them open.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. 989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
You know, as Jay Sekulow Live, and as who we are as an attorney, and our specialty being the law and government affairs, and on these constitutional issues especially, we are spending the time right now once again looking at, you know, kind of the fallout from the DACA rescission, which we support the rescission of this unconstitutional executive action by President Obama, and we support with the, President Trump, Attorney General Sessions. And by the way, Department of Homeland Security signed off on this as well. I also like the way they did it with the six-month extension to the 6 months to re-up and then the additional 2 years. So we're not rushing anybody who signed up for this, the 800,000 or so. We're not rushing any of them out of the country. There's not going to be some mass deportation. And in fact, the president's gone a step further, and he said that he'll look at it again if Congress is not going to act. So I think out of his own heart, he doesn't want to see some mass deportation. Also, he doesn't want the resources of the federal government being spent. It's expensive. And these are probably, this is probably the bottom of where you need to be focusing on when it comes to illegal immigration, like the violent criminals and gang members or terrorists trying to use the illegal immigration system. That being said, we do have, we are a nation of laws. If you break laws, if you're in violation of the law, you don't have to, they don't all require intent, by the way. So just because these are individuals that may not have had intent to break the law, that does not necessarily matter when it comes to these issues of our immigration and naturalization processes. So so just this idea, I get it, that, and it's a fair argument why Congress should act, political argument and policy argument that Congress should act because they didn't intentionally do it. But I will tell you, in law, there are some crimes that require intent, some that do not. This would be one that does not. The parents took the intentional act. They were here illegally. The kids were also with them. They were not born here. If they were born here, they'd be Americans. Make that clear as well, because a lot of people get confused with that. These are not Americans. They may have faulty paperwork that they've relied on. They may not have found out about it until some later point in their life, but we know at least 800,000 plus of them knew into adulthood that they were not in the United States legally during their life, and yet they continue to take jobs, which, by the way, that's why we need E-Verify. E-Verify would not allow this group of people to be employed. Then you would have really had pressure on Congress. But, you know, the left doesn't like E-Verify. So, because Apple wouldn't have some. The Apple said, how many? They have like hundreds of people working for Apple that are.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what he said.
Do you realize Apple's violating the law then? If they knowingly. Now, that's one where you got to have intent. You have to know that the person you've hired is illegal. But you have to have do some work to ensure that they are the right person. These people do have a lot of paperwork still. And governments give out, the local and state governments give out plenty of paperwork to these folks. But I'm not saying, you know, Apple is under no legal obligation to use E-Verify. They don't have to. But if we had an E-Verify system, none of these 800,000 people would be employed. And then I think it's a bigger crisis, actually, where Congress would probably act. But they've got to deal with this. This is why we have a Congress. These are the kind of issues which I think we can reach across the aisle and shake hands and support each other and realize we'd be doing something good for a lot of people who probably, I wouldn't say deserve it. Deserve it is going a bit far. But we're taking care of people who believed they were Americans, and I understand their position being very difficult. And that may be in disagreement with what you believe. The law is very clear. If you're not here legally, you can be deported. They are not here legally. Those 800,000 admitted that. Bad lawyers and bad attorneys told them to sign up for that. And I don't know how many of those 800,000 ever got that permit to work. But that being said, let's get to the phones.
All right, let's do it. Let's go to Nancy in California, line 6. Thanks for holding for over a half hour. We appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thanks, guys. Hey, I just want to say, having two sons and a dad that served in the military here, I'm very, very sensitive to this immigrant issue. You know, we have people who are homeless here who can't get medical support, homeless veterans and all of that stuff. And I think just like our families, you and I, we financially support our homes first. We pay our own mortgages. You know, we feed our own kids.
Yeah.
I think our government, our country needs to do that with our own people. And I understand having, you know, this being a sensitive issue. But I look at it from an accounting standpoint. That's my background. And I go, monies are limited.
Yeah.
And we need to spend them according to what's important. We can't house and feed everybody.
No. And now, listen, I will say that part of this is it does provide, you know, Social Security and all of that. So yes, and it's, to a sense, you are. But I will say this: we are talking about a very limited group when we talk about this. They did not know they were doing something illegal. I get that they were minors when they were brought to the United States. This is the country they've known. This is where they've made friends, gone to school, gotten married, had their own children who are Americans, by the way. And that's why it gets complicated the older they get as Dreamers, because of other laws that exist about bringing family and things like that to the country. So, Nancy, I just think it has to be made clear that what you're kind of discussing to me is the overall kind of like reforming our immigration system. But I think we can kind of all come to the agreement. We got 12 million people here. That may include these 800,000 Dreamers. Right. We don't have the resources, like you said, Nancy. We don't have the resources to round all those people up and deport them. That would cost more than them being here. And I think we're a country that kind of makes judgments based off that. We base judgments off of, you know, how much would this cost versus legislative action that just says, you know, if we know this was a problem, people that came here illegally, we need to put them on a path towards some kind of status here. It may never be citizenship. That may never get through Congress. Okay. But where our real focus and resources need to be spent is making sure that 20 years from now, we don't have another 14 to 25 million people here illegally.
Right. And Tim Cook, actually from Apple, our producer, got to us, said that 250 Apple employees, according to Tim Cook, are Dreamers. Now, obviously, I use the products myself, so I mean,
Nothing against
these people.
I don't know if those are the people that work at the mall. I mean, I don't know if that's people working next to Tim Cook. I mean, I don't. Right. Those could be senior level men. I doubt, because you had to be a minor. I think how is the oldest Dreamer? I think I we
16 right?
This we said, no, no, no,
no. Oh, six, the currently.
Yeah, like I wonder how old those are.
They're 30s, right?
Yeah, 30s. So I doubt that they're at the. They may be in the Tim Cook level.
Late 20s, 30s.
Some,
yeah,
but I'm assuming a lot of these people are mid level.
Yeah,
at kind of the highest. You know, they've got right. In a company that size.
Let's take a couple.
Some have probably started successful small businesses. Yeah, right. It's nothing against that these people aren't contributing, but if we want to get them really contributing, let's make sure they're paying the right taxes, that they can travel so they speak, they get a passport, et cetera.
All right, a couple of calls. Let's go to Brian quickly in Connecticut. Brian, we're running out of time. You're on the air, though.
Yeah, yesterday you had a clip of somebody talking about 12 executive orders from Obama that were invalidated by the court. I was wondering if DACA is one of them and
not
why
by the court. No, Brian, just to answer your question quickly, a court has not looked at this yet. The lawsuits are about to be filed. They're being filed as we speak. 10 states are looking at it. Now, the 10 states against it don't need to file right now because DACA has been rescinded officially. The people who oppose the rescission have filed lawsuits as of yesterday. So, again, though, it was DAPA that was handled by the courts. That was for the parents of Americans, and that was held to be unconstitutional.
We got a minute left. John, let's go to you, line one. Quickly, John, just ask your question, if you don't mind.
Okay. Thank you, guys. You guys are great. My question is it different for to get into America from different countries? Because I have a friend from the UK that became a United States citizen, and I could get it in less than a year, answered a bunch of questions.
Sure, John. We got it.
Yeah. Question. I mean, that doesn't sound right. It may be that he got a law, because you usually start out through a process. So he may have gotten step one done.
Right, where he can come in.
And then he's allowed to come in to work. That's right. Usually step one, is that you get the lawful permanent residence to work in a work permit. That's step one. Then you decide later on if you want to become a citizen. That takes years, regardless of where you're from. There may be some fast action for someone very special or unique, but for like military purposes or security purposes, that's all I can imagine there. But and listen, time for different for everybody. Single person, they can easily set up. Maybe. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Jay Sekulow Live.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.